Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new installment to the Nintendo News Report for Thursday, June 2nd, 2016. I'm your host, Alexander Coffee. Today, talking about Pokemon E3 and Skylanders with one Donalterio.
So, the Sun Legendary is weak to fire, and the Moon Legendary is weak to dark.
Okay.
I have problems with this, and we're going to be talking about Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire in a little bit, so just buckle up, everyone.
Wait, Ruby and Sapphire?
There's actually a very small connection I can make between... Anyways,
maybe,
the other voice...
Just
yeah.
Stop talking about Pokemon, because you guys just dwarf me in your knowledge and obsession.
Here's the thing, Mr. Neil Ronahan, who is also joining us today, director of Nintendo World Report. People who listen to slash watch Nintendo News Report don't like to watch slash listen to us talk about Pokemon as much as we like talking about Pokemon.
I don't know. We had somebody in the comments on the last show say that they want as much Pokemon chat as we can give them.
And me and Donald are going to eke out as much as possible, because I know we're capable of talking about Pokemon, but I also want to be considerate of the people who are like our friend Neil, who probably like a little Pokemon, but in moderation.
I'm curious, because I keep on seeing, I feel like it seems a little more calculated than usual with the Pokemon news for Sun and Moon, that it seems like it really is kind of engineered, like, every few weeks, here's a little tidbit, here's two more Pokemon. Like, I think it's kind of funny, but how do you guys feel as people who are a lot more invested in the series?
I don't think it's funny. It's not in that dick way. Not in that dick way. That's not funny, guys. but more like, I think the Pokemon machine is starting to become more of a machine every time a new game comes out. It's Black and White, and Black and White 2, it still had that, like, Pokemon spirit in it, but something feels like it changed with the move to 3DS, and I don't want to say the heart in Pokemon is missing, but it definitely feels more AAA as far as Pokemon could ever be AAA. Like, the news feels like as calculated as like a Ubisoft news drip now. The games themselves are so technically ambitious that it doesn't necessarily feel as creative as the old Pokemon game, because they're so like... The tech itself isn't necessarily great, but the artwork and the game design is now so, like, sandpapered and smoothed down that it feels a little too pure now. Like, Pokemon feels like it's missing a little bit of its heart, and I think this news cycle is starting to reflect that more?
I mean, there was a direct that announced Sun and Moon that literally just announced Sun and Moon and nothing else. Like, the video was nice, but, like, there was a whole lot of nothing. Then we had the three starters revealed in a very calculated way. Now we have the two legendaries revealed in a very calculated way.
I predicted last week, Donald, if you remember.
Right.
Because I was thinking about how Solgaleo and Lunala, which are the two names of the legendaries, because we had the trademark weeks ago and we hadn't gotten their names yet, I was thinking to myself, this has to be the next like piece of news. Now, we got, like, a couple surprises, like, in that video also. Like, it felt like three micro-trailers glued together. But, this makes sense to have the two box legendaries get a focus this time around.
Yeah, and, I mean, with the old Pokemon news cycle, it was, you know, Korokoro fake leaks, and then Korokoro actual leaks, and then we get the information, you know, just whenever Nintendo feels like tripping out. But now that the Pokemon company seems to have taken it over, they can put out a consistent message, and we have the same information that the audience in Japan does, which is really nice when you're considering that these games are coming out simultaneously worldwide, unless you're in Europe.
Well, that's not entirely true, and we're going to talk more about that in a second, but it does feel like Japan is getting slightly better information than us. Between them getting those like three like 20-second videos, and last time how they got like a little more footage than we did. Like in this trailer, it was revealed that you can choose from basically eight different playable characters of different races and hair colors and etc. But that was revealed in the last Japanese trailer, like, a month ago. And it does feel like, even though Pokemon's really good about dropping news at the same time, Japan still has it slightly better than us. Like, we got to see what the bottom screen looks like for the first time in a Japanese video, which is something that, like, some of the people watching this are gonna be like, who the fuck cares? But it's still that little stuff that, as a Pokemon fan, like, you notice.
And apparently it looks a lot like Fantasy Life, Neil.
So. Yeah, no, it did. I saw that screen.
But to talk about the actual news itself, the big things were Solgaleo, which is the Pokemon Sun Pokemon, and Lunala, the Pokemon Moon Pokemon, got revealed. Solgaleo is Psychic and Steel type, which I was going to compare to Ruby and Sapphire, and it's the only comparison I have to make to these two games. But it reminds me of Groudon, in how Groudon looks like a fire type as much as a fire type has ever looked like a fire type, but it's actually like ground and rock, which is really weird.
Just ground, yeah. I
just
get
ground? Oh, okay. But yeah, you know what I'm talking about. And Solgaleo is Psychic and Steel, and it looks like a fire type, especially for Pokemon Sun. It is referred to with reverence as the beast that devours the sun, which kind of locks in that I'm kind of getting Pokemon Sun.
I think Lunala looks cooler. and I like the name better.
And I like how Lunala can beat Solgaleo pretty handily.
Yeah, well, so I think lions are kind of better than bats. Here's what bothers me, is that these are both relatively tired animals now for Pokemon, because we have good-looking lion types, or lion-esque Pokemon from last generation, and a lion-like starter this time around, and Lunala is a bat, of which there are 14 or 15 different bats already spread across the Pokemon franchise.
However, Lunala doesn't just end in bat. It's not like Lunabat.
Lunalabat? that would be so embarrassing. But yes, Solgaleo also has the Full Metal Body ability, in which a Pokemon's stats cannot be lowered by the effects of an opponent's moves or ability. Lunala is the moon with an E Pokemon, and how... So Solgaleo is the S-U-N-N-E Pokemon, and Lunala is the M-O-O-N-E Pokemon, and it is referred to as the beast that calls the moon. It looks cooler in some ways because its wings have, like, the night sky pattern on them, which is pretty sweet. It has a signature move called Moongeist Beam, and has a Shadow Shield ability, which means that when it's at full HP, the first attack it gets from another Pokemon is, like, weakened. So basically, it gives it a little protection for the first hit it takes in battle. Neil, you are Team Lunala. Donald, where are you at?
I'm still deciding, because, I mean, the Sun move looked really cool, but I am sort of leaning toward Moon. I'll probably end up with both anyway, because that's just what I do. But I think my main game that I probably keep around is probably going to be Moon at this point. But we'll see what happens when they start revealing more of the Pokemon that are going to come in, because we're 6 months out from release now, and we've only got 5 Pokemon that are new shown off in this game.
Which is a good thing.
There's going to be at least 10.
Yes. because the way the Pokedex was shown in that video. The Pokedex also revealed that there is going to be 300 Pokemon in the regional decks, because the only 3 Pokemon that were seen in that Pokedex were the 3 starters, and it said 1% completion, which makes it sound like it's going to be a similar X and Y situation, where there are going to be a lot of old Pokemon, though we have no idea how many actual new Pokemon there are going to be.
But there's something else in that Pokedex, too.
Rotom, which is kind of nutso.
It is a blatant shot across the bow at Yo-Kai Watch. This is sort of revenge for Yo-Kai Watch's mascot being a cat.
I didn't even realize that this is basically just, it's a Yo-Kai Watch shot. Way to go, Game Freak.
Yeah,
so are you saying that Yo-Kai Watch, because Pikachu is a mouse, Yo-Kai Watch chose a cat to almost be like a Halo Killer situation?
Exactly, and so Game Freak is coming back with, you know what, you want a ghost that'll possess your guide? We got one too, and we had it 10 years ago.
Yeah, the Pokedex has a Rotom this time, which apparently not all trainers have a Rotom in their Pokedex, like this is just a rare version. And that allows you to, basically you can talk to your Pokedex, it has a personality now, it can show the player's current location in their next destination, it provides advice on where to go next, and it also suggested that it would make it easier to communicate with Pokemon, which makes me wonder if we're going to have other talking Pokemon this time around, or if it suggests the fusion mechanic from the anime is going to be implemented somehow. And then the other thing that is kind of on the back of this is a QR scanner feature, which allows players to see information about Pokemon when they scan QR code patterns by scanning in special QR code patterns. Fans can register Pokemon of the Alola region to their Pokedex and find out where they live, which makes me think that this will not be a replacement for passwords, where Pokemon can, like, actually join your party or you can battle them through QR codes. They'll just enter your Pokedex through the QR code patterns.
Yeah, they'll basically show up in the Pokedex as seen instead of caught. Although, I mean, they could have used this instead of punching in the serial codes that they do now for things like Darkrai and Mew. They could use QR codes maybe as a distribution method for event Pokemon.
That's very true. I did think about that, but I also wonder if the way QR codes work is slightly different than the way passwords would work, if QR codes need to be specific to basically be identified as a certain Pokemon, or if they can say this value to this value is this Pokemon, this value to this value is this Pokemon, and then they just have like 5 specific values dedicated to specific distributions that they plan on having down the line.
It could be, but I mean, we'll probably have to wait and see how they handle it, because I know QR codes can pass some data, but I don't know if they'd be able to pass. They should be able to at least pass scene data. It's a question of whether or not you'll be able to actually get anything as a result of this. But it could set things up for, like, the GTS, because you know places like Serebii and Bulbapedia are going to have QR codes listed.
Fair. There were a few characters also revealed. Professor Kukui?
I feel like this is necessary information. The QR code is older than Pokemon.
Yes.
It is very... Like, I don't know why QR codes are a thing that are still used in 2016. That was the thing about the QR codes that bugged me. But I just went and checked, and the QR code was invented in 1994.
Really? It just wasn't heavily utilized until, like, 08, 09,
until
probably.
Smartphones and stuff. But, like, I think it's really dumb to have QR codes in a game. At any point in the past 20 years, I think it would have been dumb. I think it's especially dumb now, because who uses QR codes for anything?
I think companies who are, like, 3 years behind on what young people are actually doing are still using QR codes, but I don't think their audiences are using QR codes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think this is a typical, Nintendo and Pokemon company being slow to update.
Yes, absolutely. There's some other stuff we gotta talk about. Professor Kukui, and I'm trying to also pull up the map because we saw the map. Okay, here it is. So Professor Kukui is, like, a pretty cool guy. He apparently takes direct attacks from Pokemon sometimes in order to get research, which is kind of badass. Lily is a mysterious girl who assists the professor, whatever. She's gonna tie into the story. There's this boy named Hao, who has a real weakness for malasadas, a famous treat in the Alola region. By the way, malasadas are like a type of donut. It's a Portuguese confection. I just googled that. So those donuts do exist.
Are they older than QR codes?
18th century, maybe?
Well, Donald, let's not... They might not be that modern. Actually, it's even more modern than that. 1878 is their history in the United States. But they existed. They existed before Pokemon. The Alola region. It is 4 islands and 1 artificial island. There are supposed to be a lot of rare Pokemon on the island, which is very interesting to me. Maybe they could just be referring to all the new Pokemon that aren't seen anywhere else, but I also wonder if they're going to pull an X and Y and, like, try to bring back some Pokemon that have been neglected in generations past, like how Snubbull and Grumble were kind of, like, brought back a little bit, as was Mr. Mime and some other guys. But it's the way this region is set up is very bizarre, because it's the way the size of these islands, especially from taking like 10-20 minutes, like looking at this map, remind me of that like island that is the post game in Pokemon Platinum, where it's like 4 different towns going in a circle. And I don't know if I want 4 of those instead of 1 big connected region, but we'll see how they do it. Yeah. It looks like
It's basically the 4 islands of Hawaii. So it's good to see that there's going to be, you know, all 4 of the islands are going to be represented. And you'll probably have like 2 gyms per island with Victory Road and the Elite Four somewhere, maybe at that artificial place.
Yes. I'm also looking at the islands now, and there are these 4 islands. It does not actually look like there's a lot of room to surf between them. Like, it seems like the islands are actually relatively closed off, which is a good thing, and that there are, like, some surfing spots, but it doesn't look like you'll be surfing. Like, it'll probably be ship to ship to ship to ship, and then fly eventually wherever you want to go. But I see, the first island is, like, has a tree and some mountains and stuff. The second seems like a bunch of towns and cities and a small volcano that seems to be filled with water or something. The third one has an actual volcano and a couple towns, like some seaport-type towns. And then the fourth one is where clearly all the late-game stuff is. I look at this mountain that's at the top, and I bet there's going to be some legendary Pokemon there. And then there's also the artificial island. There is a couple little specks that are all over the map. Like, there's a small island hidden in the very back. There's a tiny little speck of something up here. And that there's also another small island, which could be the starting town, but we'll see. I don't know. Just a very curious decision, though I can see what they're doing if they're choosing Hawaii this time, I guess.
Yeah, I think the real question about the islands at this point is what are the clouds covering this time? Because Game Freak brought that trope back for hiding the stuff they really don't want anybody to look at until probably the postgame.
Well, the funny thing about that is that in Pokemon Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire, the clouds were the thing, I guess. Like the clouds were just hiding the clouds, yeah. If that makes sense. But we can see a little island being covered by a cloud back there.
So that's probably where your Battle Whatever or Battle Frontier hopefully is.
Yeah, but this does not look like a game that's going to have a substantial post-game. Like, I'm looking at the number of towns here, and I'm like, there's enough room for, like, 3 or 4 extra areas, 1 small island you go to, and that's probably it. Like, I bet we're looking at another X and Y situation, which is unfortunately not ideal, but who knows? I could always be proven wrong.
But there was something else that came out from the Pokemon Company today that kind of threw everything out of kilter.
Yes, the Pokemon Company suggested, which turned out to be an actual announcement, that Pokemon Sun and Moon was going to have a significant presence at E3 this year. So Pokemon Sun and Moon is actually going to be kicking off the E3 Treehouse Live, or at least that's the suggestion, based on the way Nintendo and Pokemon Company have worded things. There's also going to be a Pokemon Go developer Q&A the following...
To kick off day 2.
To kick off day 2. There is a day 2, by the way, which we're going to be talking about in a second.
10 a.m. Pacific time is when this Pokemon Go developer Q&A will kick off. It's a special one.
Mm-hmm. And there's also going to be some Pokemon special thing, which will either be another roundtable thing, like from E3 2013, or it would be like a Nintendo Direct
thing. Where did that come out of?
That came out of the words Nintendo gave about what was actually happening on day two. Is that correct, Donald?
The Pokemon special direct thing, I think that was mentioned as part of the Sun and Moon stuff for day one. And then all the Pokemon Go stuff is on day two, along with, they also mentioned games including, but not necessarily limited to, Monster Hunter Generations, Dragon Quest VII, and Tokyo Mirage Sessions are all going to be shown.
And more. And more.
And more. Maybe something out of nowhere. Who knows?
But yeah, it seems like, at least as far as how Nintendo's wording it, which I guess we all gotta pay close attention to how Nintendo words things, considering it was like, only Zelda will be playable. It's gonna be a day of streaming for Zelda, and then, like, those words got turned asunder. It seems like the Pokemon Sun and Moon stuff, which will have first gameplay, will kick off things at 9 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, June 14th, in Nintendo's, like, press conference slot that they're not really using for that, as they have in the past. But yeah, so that'll kick off the Tuesday show. And the word on that is that it's going to be people from Nintendo who are working on the game will be demoing the game. Or like Nintendo of America, like the localizers, will be showing the game during that. There was something from the Japan Pokemon Company tweet that like said that very directly before Nintendo of America even got in front of it.
Do we think this is a response to the fan reaction to the Zelda news, or do we think there was just some really bad miscommunication along the way?
From my take on it, and from talking to some people too, it seems like this was probably always the plan, to have 2 days of Treehouse Live. I think that the Pokemon stuff on day one, being before the Zelda thing, that might have been, like, past couple weeks came up. Like, it could have been that they announced the Zelda stuff, and they were planning that Tuesday was going to be all Zelda all the time, and then the Pokemon Company was like, hey, we got the Sun and Moon stuff. You want to show off gameplay at E3? And then Nintendo fitted in. I personally believe that the day two of Treehouse Live at E3, that's showing off Monster Hunter, Dragon Quest, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, I think that was always in the cards, because it wasn't something that, like, people are booking appointments for, it's just something that they're streaming. They didn't have to announce it so far in advance.
E3 2016 Pokemon Special, it's going to be June 16th at 10 a.m. Eastern, so the third day of E3.
Yeah, wow. I can see why you would do that, just like you would have a second and a third day, because it doesn't make sense to bring all the Treehouse guys down for one day of live streaming. But the fact that that is on day three is really throwing. Nintendo has done a really piss poor job of communicating just what exactly they're going to show, because they've got some pretty exciting stuff to show, but the first word of it we got was that press briefing thing, or not the press briefing, the financial briefing thing, largely silent.
Which I think that was a necessary thing, like much like how they mentioned the NX when they announced mobile, like when they had to set investor expectations for what E3 was going to be, and you know that Zelda and NX were getting delayed, so they kind of, I think their hand was forced that they had to reveal something about their E3 plans back in April, probably earlier than they would have wanted to, because it was tied to the year-end report the year projections for the upcoming fiscal year that we're in the middle of right now.
Yeah.
It's Thursday morning? Is it like a Treehouse Live thing?
No, well, they didn't say, but I don't think it's going to be. That they call it E3 2016 Pokemon Special to me implies something closed and not like a stream, if that makes sense. Like it seems like something that would either be pre-recorded or would be in front of a live audience. But the fact that they're using Special, E3 2016 Pokemon Special, I think that's going to be a direct. Also consider the fact that it's like the Treehouse stuff is starting like around the afternoon, and the E3 2016 Pokemon special is starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific.
Okay. Yeah, it's totally going to be a video. Yeah. Like a pre-recorded bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's so weird. Like, all the... Yeah, I mean, Donald, you're right. All the messaging is just... It's weird.
Yeah. I think Nintendo's still figuring it out. I think Nintendo's still figuring it out. Figuring out what... presence they need to have still at E3.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's as simple as E3 is dying, E3 is going away, E3 is changing. I think Nintendo is just figuring out what they want to message and what's the best way they can get out that message. Because consider the fact that, both the 3DS and Wii U are kind of in their twilight, especially Wii U. It's not that...
I mean, especially 3DS. 3DS is a 5-plus-year-old system, and that tech wasn't new when it came out.
Right. But what I'm saying is, because both these systems are in their twilight, it might not be that, Nintendo stepping away from E3, it might be that they just have that little to show, and they need to, like, completely change their format to seem new and to seem like they actually have stuff going on.
Yeah.
And I think if they were having a, like, they were doing a digital event this year, last year's event didn't go over well in Japan because there were several things in there that already came out. So it's like, why are you showing this again for the Japanese audience? And as Chris Kohler pointed out on Twitter earlier today, this year, 90% of what Nintendo is producing is localizations.
Yeah, so, I mean, just looking at, like, well, let's think of something that's coming out post E3 that isn't already out in Japan, that's coming out in 2016.
Paper Mario.
Pokemon, Federation Force, Paper Mario.
Right. Is there nothing else? Are we convinced?
Everything else in the lineup right now came out in Japan anywhere from a few months to a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Yo-Kai Watch, Style Savvy, Disney Magical World 2, the Dragon Quest games, Monster Hunter Generations, the Ace Attorney game, which I wouldn't be surprised if that showed up a little bit. But that, I mean, that's going to be out in Japan, I think, basically like during E3 or right after it.
It comes out next week in Japan.
Okay. All right. So right before. But yeah, what else could we expect from this day two? Because day one, it seems like, unless there's any more last-minute curveballs, that's going to be some Pokemon Sun and Moon footage, and then all day Zelda. Day two could have some surprises.
Day two, if they're going to do a Treehouse Live, I don't think they can start with a demo. Like, that can't be the way a game is announced, unless it's another localization. I think it has to be messaged through a trailer, through a direct, or through their social media, or something. I think we need to see something before they just drop completely new games on us. And I think there's still room for another Nintendo-published surprise or two for both Japan and the West, like if they actually did have a real Animal Crossing game in development all along, which, I mean, maybe that's a shot in the dark, but whatever. But I think there would need to be a direct between now and E3 for that to actually happen. But as I look at the calendar, and it is June 2nd, I'm wondering when in the world can a direct actually go, because there's no time for one on day 1 or day 2 or day 3 of E3, and they would have to drop it basically the Sunday of with little warning, but then again, what's the point of just saying there's not going to be a Nintendo Direct, or not saying there's going to be a Nintendo Direct, or doing it next week. Because it's Thursday, almost Friday. It's not going to be this week, obviously.
Yeah.
I disagree with you on they can't announce anything at Treehouse Live. I think anything that they announce at Treehouse Live can be solved by putting out a press release either during Treehouse Live or right after it, recapping the event. They've done that before with other streamed events, where they'll do, like, a press release out. I mean, they do it with press events. They do it with Nintendo Directs. It might not be something super exciting. Like, I think Mother 3 could be announced for release in North America and Europe. I think that could be announced during day 2 of E3.
That makes sense.
And I don't think there's anything weird with them just being like, oh, hey, like, we're going to demo the beginning of Mother 3 and talk about the game. And, you know, the 10-year path that it took to come out in America and Europe. And, oh, yeah, it's going to be out, like, right now, end of the day, something like that.
Or tomorrow with the downloads update. But they would probably...
Or even intercut the Treehouse Live with just, like, a video with eToy like they had at the World Championships last year.
Yeah. And you say they can't drop something without any warning, but remember they did do the Direct Micro about this time last year, which was literally out of nowhere for North America, and that's where they announced Chibi Robo Ziplash, and I think there was one other thing that was brand new in that.
LBX was revealed for coming out in North America.
Okay, so that was two new games, and that's pretty much the most we can probably expect from that's not already announced for Nintendo at this point, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, you can also see like a Box Boy 2 being brought up. During day two. I mean, it's. I don't think it's going to be anything where it's like, it's a new 3D Mario game coming out in the fall. Like, if that happened, that'd be really cool. But, like, that's probably not going to happen. But I would not be surprised to see, like, new announcements and new news coming up in Treehouse Live periodically throughout the day. I believe it's tough to know how this all went down because I was at E3 the past couple of years. But I believe that Fantasy Life was announced for North American release during Treehouse Live.
During the press release, I think. I think that and Mario Party 10 were both announced in the press release following that Nintendo Direct.
So that means they could have a press release on Tuesday that lists a bunch of games that then could get fully blown out on Wednesday.
Yeah, like...
In detail.
Like, and they might, and Treehouse Live might even let something slip, like they might let slip whatever the release date is for Rhythm Heaven Megamix.
Yeah, there's another game that is already out in Japan that is on the way to North America and Europe, hopefully, in the next couple months. They've been really quiet on that one, but that's one of those games that just, like, be ready for it at any moment.
And Picross 3D 2.
That is a game that will get announced in the next 2 weeks, I think.
I think that's only coming out in Europe.
Really?
Yeah.
It's only been rated there.
Did the game
sell
well?
Yeah, there's been no murmur about a North American release for Picross 3D2, and that's a very sad thing.
But was there murmurs of things like Fantasy Life? A couple of years ago, or even...
Yeah, actually, there was. I think I remember hearing stuff that, like, the composer for Fantasy Life was just like, yeah, that game's coming to America soon.
Maybe Chibi Robo's a better example, then, because I don't think anybody saw that thing coming.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, I mean, no one really saw it come out. As much as I love Ziplash, that game just came and went.
I agree with you, Neil, that during the Treehouse Live, they can definitely, definitely announce small stuff. Like Mother 3, which isn't that small, but it's the kind of small for this Treehouse Live. I think either there are no other, like, quote-unquote AAA games by Nintendo being coming out for the rest of the year that we don't know about, or they have to get messaged before the Treehouse Live. I don't think during a stream that's focused for super long-term gameplay that they will just drop a trailer, because the Treehouse Live streams, even though they have, like, relatively big audiences, they have audiences that keep, like, cycling in and out. And I think they would want to hit, like, the most people at one time, and I think you can only do that through a direct.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I think it's the popular fallacy that directs aren't as big as we in the insular Nintendo community think they are. I think Treehouse Live is more on par with directs than like a direct is with an E3 press conference.
I mean, I think I'm one of the few people on the planet who watched all of Treehouse Live last year.
Good for
you.
And part of it was I kind of had to just in case something did break. But I think I think last year the biggest thing that broke. Aside from the fact that they didn't show Devil's Third, because I think at that point they were trying to get rid of it, was the first English voice acting for Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Okay. And then, I mean, they showed off Tokyo Mirage Sessions last year. I remember I watched a bunch of that on the floor while I was online for Star Fox.
That game's coming out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
That's cool. Shin Megami Tensei Fire Emblem actually exists now. Well, kind of. It kind of is never going to exist, but also it exists.
We know somebody who's playing it right now.
I know multiple people playing it.
Wish I could be one of them.
Yeah. Don't be.
Okay. Well, I think that covers our talk on Nintendo E3. We'll see if some direct thing happens in the next couple weeks, but someone said in the chat that they think it's going to be like the week or two after E3, and yeah. That makes sense to me. But
I do, I want to butt in with some E3 stuff. So, for E3 here at Nintendo World Report on our home team, we're going to do some dumb shit. Where we all get together and just stream games and do videos like this, discussing E3 as it's going on, streaming Nintendo games that might relate to, you know, your Microsoft press conferences, your Sony press conferences, your EA press conferences, and all that jazz. Might have some Nindy developers on to talk about their games during this. It might be really cool, it might be an utter disaster, but hopefully I'll have some sort of schedule to show everybody in the coming days, less than a week. But Sunday, June 12th, we're gonna be doing stuff as E3 goes.
I need to talk to you, Neil, about what we're actually going to do for this show. we'll figure it out. Nintendo News Report will have a place during E3 2016. Thankfully, there will be enough news that there will be a Nintendo News Report in some context with some people, probably me being one of them, definitely Donald, obviously.
That's if I don't chase myself off the internet for completely sucking the tailpipe while I'm streaming.
Okay. That generally does it for that news. Now, I would attempt to talk about Skylanders Imaginators, but I think I'm just going to hand it to Neil and just let you talk about it for a little while.
Alright, so Skylanders Imaginators is the sixth Skylanders game, which is crazy when you think about it. It's back in the hands of the dudes who created it. So for people who aren't in the know about Skylanders, it's basically two development companies that work on it. There's Toys for Bob, who they came up with the idea. They do a lot of work with the figures. And there's Vicarious Visions, that us Nintendo fans know as the guys who like brought DLC to Wii in the Guitar Hero games and made some cool Game Boy Advance Tony Hawk games. Last year was a Vicarious Visions joint. That was a pretty solid game. This year is a Toys for Bob joint. And the kind of cool thing that they're doing this year is you can make your own Skylander. They are having a contest for people, like, I guess people, by people I mean kids, because it is at the end of the day, despite being a hell of an awesome franchise, it's a kids franchise. Kids can send in for this contest to make their own Skylander. There's also these creation crystals that you can get, so that's like one of the new plastic things that you can buy for this game, where you will be able to make your own characters and bring them into the world. I don't know exactly how like that creation interface is going to work. Our E3 team should be checking out the game at E3, so that's cool.
Really? I thought Activision wasn't going to E3 this year.
I mean,
aside from...
they're around. They don't have a booth. A lot of companies don't have booths and they're still there.
But Twitter does.
They have a Twitter as a booth?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. They're trying to get into gaming. Sure. But anyway, Skylanders, Imaginators, you create your own things using these creation crystals. There's also 20 new other figures called, like, senseis or something. That's like the token. Here's a powered-up guy that can do this awesome special move that's new for this game. And then there's also 11 fan-favorite villains that will be playable figures. So, like, 2 years ago, there was Trap Team, where you could trap villains in things that looked like these creation crystals, and then bring them to play as the villains. And the villains were really fun. There was a dude named Broccoli Guy, who was just like a broccoli who, like, cast magic powers.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cool wolf guy. Like, a lot of the character designs in these games are awesome. So you can play as villains, and I don't know, like, I'm at a point, like, a couple years ago I doubted Skylanders a lot, and then was proven wrong with Trap Team. Like, I thought that was going to be it. That was going to be the line where it's like, no, this is dumb. And some of the, you know, like, the creation crystal, the new figures and everything, that's a... it's a big ask. That's a lot of new stuff to buy. But as far as the games from year to year, they're awesome. So I look forward to play another awesome 3D platformer in Skylanders Imaginators, only coming to Wii U, no longer coming to Wii or 3DS.
That's probably the best decision for them.
Yeah. Last year's Wii and 3DS game was just a racing game.
Really?
Yeah. And, it was like 2 weeks before release when people were like, wait a minute! Because they just were kind of mum on it. But I see someone in the chat mentioning the Skylanders amiibo, like your Bowser and your Donkey Kong from last year's game. They will work on the Nintendo version again, and it seems pretty likely that there will be some kind of amiibo Skylanders partnership again. There's nothing to report right now. Maybe that'll be something that comes up on, day two of E3. And that could be a thing that happens. And I think there has been a comment from someone related to Activision or Toys for Bob saying that there will be a special guest character that they're going to announce. I don't know if that's a Nintendo one or something like, I don't know, like, maybe it's Crash Bandicoot? That's just, I mean, Activision owns him.
Well, I think Crash Bandicoot might be Sony's big look at the dream game we're creating this year for you guys. Because
coming out 2020.
2020. Because the reason why I say that is some people were looking at the Sony PlayStation E3 experience like logo, and they noticed that there's like a plank of wood behind the PlayStation E3 experience wording that has the exact same ridges as the Crash Bandicoot logo. Which is like...
Is that the same tree that's like outside of that one game company in Europe?
Massive, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
But as far as what could be the guest for the 25th anniversary for Skylanders, I can think of a certain Blue Hedgehog whose 25th anniversary is this year.
Yeah, I mean, that would actually be a pretty good get for both parties, I think, because Skylanders is coming out with a cartoon show. It'd be nice synergy with Sonic Boom.
Sonic announcement in the next couple weeks, too.
Yeah, Sonic Boom will be, or the Sonic Boom 2, the 3DS game, which is coming out in September, that will be at E3 as well. But I think the Sonic news is coming post E3.
Yeah, I think the Comic-Con, they have something booked there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worry about Skylanders. I worry about Toys to Life. Because we got Skylanders right now, which is still going strong, but it has been, like, in a sales slight downslope lately. We got Disney Infinity, which was, like, kind of the top of its game, and then, because of some issues, and because it wasn't the biggest thing ever, doesn't necessarily have a place anymore, because Disney canceled it. And we got Amiibo, which started as the super shit in the beginning, but is getting less discussed regardless of how well it sells. And now, I think about Rock Band 4 and Guitar Hero Live, which those peripheral things were the top of the game industry. They fell off. They stopped making them for a few years. They try bringing it back, and they do so disappointingly that Harmonix changes publisher from Mad Catz to PDP, and, like, no one ever hears of Guitar Hero Live ever again.
They're bringing out new tracks to Guitar Hero, like, every week. They have new shows, like, they're supporting it. Like, there's not going to be another one of those, probably. But it's not like, if you are active in that game space, you're getting new content, and you don't have to pay for it.
But are we looking at, do we think Toys to Life has seen its peak, and we're on a downslope?
Maybe, but I'm not sure. So,
that's fair.
Okay, so with the Disney Infinity stuff, too, I mean, Disney's issue with that is that they did it stupidly. They saw, like, I guess from Disney Infinity 1 to Disney Infinity 2, they're like, oh, okay, we're really successful. Let's go large. Going large was a dumb idea. I think Nintendo kind of had the same problem with Amiibo, where they're like, all right, we have this, you know, the shortage. We're going to flood the market with all these Animal Crossing Amiibo. That kind of bit them in the ass. I don't think as much as Disney's reported 1 million spare Hulks in a warehouse problems. and I think what makes Activision be able to survive with Skylanders, and there's a pretty great interview over on Time Magazine's website with Activision CEO Eric Hirschberg, where he kind of says just like, Yeah, like, I'm not going to speak about Disney directly, but, like, we've had some slow times, but we're navigating the storm as best we can, basically. And I think what it comes down to is that Activision is smarter in how they're doing Toys to Life compared to how Disney was. And I think that that's to be said in how they're setting up Skylanders, where they're kind of building more than leaping, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think they're just like, all right, we had a success, let's go insane. I think they're trying to stack success. Like, there's a Skylanders Academy is a cartoon show, I believe launching this fall, that they basically spent 5 years hyping up this cartoon to kids. And that Skylanders brand is really huge. Mm-hmm. It's not Star Wars huge, but as far as for kids brands out there, that's big. And now it's going to finally have a cartoon show after 5 years, or CGI show, or whatever it is.
It's a kid-focused game that, in like 6-7 years, has become the 11th biggest game franchise of all time.
Which, that's also a little bit misleading, because I think the reports on that were that they included the cost of figures.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's still very impressive. It's still a multi-billion-dollar...
It's probably top 20.
Yeah, like, it's still a multi-billion-dollar game franchise, but, like, calling it the 11th biggest game franchise is... I mean, that's kind of like how, like, oh, like, this movie was only in IMAX, but it did really well. Like, that's kind of that reasoning.
To answer friend of the show, Alex Osborne, Lego Dimensions is still a thing.
Apparently. We haven't heard anything about a follow-up this fall. I think it's been hinted at. Maybe we'll find out about that closer to E3. Who knows?
The big difference between Activision and Disney is, even though I'm sure Disney has dealt with plenty of failures in the past because they're one of the biggest media companies ever, if not the biggest, after, like, the Marvel and Star Wars, but Activision knows how to deal with franchises that are at the top of their game in throughout the entire industry. Like, they got to see the rise and fall, and brief rise and fall again, of Guitar Hero. And they've been with Call of Duty since the early 2000s, like, it's been over 10 years now, comfortably, probably 15 years. Like, I think Activision is way better equipped to handle this kind of thing and has a more realistic perspective on this kind of thing than the interactive division of Disney does, especially considering the scale of profits they're looking for is likely very different.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Okay. I think
To sum up, dude, that Skylanders game is probably going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah, I hope all video games are a ton of fun. I hope this is the best game of all time, and I hope it's the one that gets me into Skylanders, even though it obviously won't be.
No. Didn't you play one of them a couple years ago?
Yeah, I played, Swap Force was the one I played. That game is a decently fun, mildly Diablo-like action-adventure game.
I actually think Swap Force might have been the weakest out of all of them, in my book. I think that Trap Team and then Superchargers were both, like, big steps up.
Okay. Superchargers, it was just vehicles as the big thing for that, right?
Yeah, but, like, the racing stuff is pretty good.
Mm. Okay.
It was just, Superchargers was just a really good game. Like, the hook wasn't as engrossing as Swap Force or Trap Team.
Fair. Ken Rule 09 says, bet there's a new line of Amiibo announced at E3. Friend of the show, a.k.a. staffer of NintendoWorldReport.com, Matt West, also says, the Monster Hunter Stories Amiibo look fantastic. You're right, Matt. And also, that could be the new line of Amiibo announced at E3, alongside Monster Hunter Stories.
Eh, I think Stories is, like, very much a next year thing. The Monster Hunter games seem to have a pretty big gap between release dates. I can't think of what an Amiibo line coming out this fall would be.
Well, we because
it can't be Zelda.
We still need Cloud, Corn, and Bayonetta. So they need something.
Yeah, so there's three Amiibo they could mention at E3.
They could do a Paper Mario Amiibo, which would actually be pretty cool. Like, I'd be into, like, a Paper Mario Amiibo.
But wouldn't it look a lot like Mr. Game & Watch, though?
Yeah. And also, since Paper Mario is not what he used to be, there's a part of me that's like, ah, would I even want that? And the answer might be no, but I'll get it anyways.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about Color Splash. Like, I keep on, whenever anybody talks to me about it, I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, I'm going to buy it, probably. I'm not
going to be happy about it. Having like, not played Sticker Star, I'm interested in that game, but I'm hoping it shows up on day two. Let's put it that way.
We need to know what that game actually is, because it did not trailer well, if that makes sense.
It just looked like Sticker Star 2.0. That's all it looked like.
I can...
And then I'm so bummed. Dude, Paper Mario 64 is really fun.
Paper Mario Thousand Year Door and Sticker Star... not Sticker Star, but also Paper Mario 64.
Okay, I'm going to lay this out.
Yeah.
Alex, I think you might be with me on this one.
Sure.
So Color Splash, if it indeed is just seemingly Sticker Star 2.0.
Yeah.
Whenever that game comes out this fall, because it'll be like the only damn Wii U game coming out, let's just all play Thousand Year Door and treat that as a game that came out in 2016.
Neil, I think you might have sowed the seeds for this weeks ago. And I think you're just trying to get me to come along for your wild ride.
No, like, that Paper Mario 64 Game Club thing is, as far as I can tell, dead on the vine. I just haven't mentioned it, no one else has, so it just faded away.
Here's the issue, Neil.
I do really want to play Thousand Year Door, because that game's awesome. It's so much fun.
You're right, it might be, like, one of the better RPGs of all time in some ways, depending on opinion, I don't know. But my issue, the reason why I'm actually showing hesitation, because I really, really want to play that game again, is that there's no GameCube Virtual Console. I don't have any computer strong enough to run Thousand Year Door. I don't have a Wii on me, and I don't know how expensive it would be to get a Wii to play Thousand Year Door. Like there are a lot of things holding me back, and I really want GameCube games to be released on Wii U, which is never going to happen, by the way.
Yeah, although, Neil, you say there's no games coming out this fall, but it seems like half the eShop is coming out on disc in the next 3 months.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even mention that.
Oh, they're doing a PS4 thing, where they're starting to release physical eShop games.
Yeah, and they've got Runbo in there, although 13AM Games has said there's some misinformation about that. Wait for E3. And Tumblestone, that funky-looking puzzle game that is apparently...
Oh god, it's so good.
That is apparently going to come out on Wii U on a disc.
Yeah. As well as... So the company, I think it's Nighthawk Interactive is the name of the company.
Yep.
I know it's Nighthawk. I don't know if Interactive is the word that comes next. It's seems like it's some guys that used to work at Majesco. I don't even know. Is Majesco like... I think it's still hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
But I assume that Majesco is probably, like, three people and a can of beans at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they put a boy in his blob this year.
Yeah.
What system? What system do they put out the... That was the Atlas one, right?
What?
The boy in his blob?
Yeah, which boy in his blob?
The Way Forward one.
Yeah. The was originally on the Wii, and they ported it to, like, PS4 and Vita.
Oh, they're the Cooking Mama people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cooking Mama dried up. So did Zumba. But anyway, so Nighthawk Interactive, seemingly from the ashes of Majesco, they're based out of Edison, New Jersey. Fun fact, used to work in the same office park as where Majesco and likely Nighthawk Interactive are located. But they seem to be publishing Tumblestone, they seem to be publishing Runbo, they seem to also be publishing... a version of Renegade Kids ATV Wild Ride for Xbox One and maybe other platforms called ATV Renegades. I know when I tweeted at Renegade Kids Jules Watson about this, he said, "Surprise!" So I think like that's confirmation. And the Tumblestone guys pretty much confirmed it. And the Runbo guys just basically said, it's not entirely true, but just wait till E3. So it seems like all these games are coming to retail in some form.
Although, another one that was listed on there was from friend of the show, Chris Johnson's Adult Swim Games, was apparently an Adult Swim collection, and they said they were issuing a takedown request to Amazon for it.
Yeah, was that another Nighthawk joint?
Yeah,
or?
That was on that on that list of games, and Nighthawk actually did the Talos Principle last fall for PS4.
Yeah.
So they've got
They've been around, and they're also, they're the company that I believe is helping helping Renegade Kid along with development for Treasure Knot, so that game actually comes out.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for Majesco, and here's something interesting. It actually is on NASDAQ. Like, you can trade stocks for Majesco, which I think is very interesting.
Wait, I think I know people who have done that.
Didn't they get
on NASDAQ. It's like acronym is COOL, COOL.
Yep.
Didn't they get delisted like 2 years ago or something?
They might have.
Maybe.
Because the stock their stock was doing terribly for a good long while.
They are not doing well right now. Okay, let me just... The last reported Wikipedia revenue, $75 million, which is whatever. Operating income of $2 million. Net income, $490,000.
No, I believe that's negative.
Wait.
I think that red arrow might mean decrease.
Right, could it be down? It means decrease as my, like, mouse... I don't know anything about stocks.
Yeah.
Is anyone in the chat, like, does decrease mean it's
less than
before?
I think we can sum it up as Majesco's doing, like, shit.
Even if that was positive 490,000, that's not good for something on NASDAQ.
That is... that is circling the drain numbers.
Yeah.
And they've been like that for a long time. I think since... For at least, like, 5 years.
Oh, Majesco put out the Gone Home PS4, Xbox One, because they're Midnight City. They did Costume Quest 2. They're Shadow Warrior also. So they have a couple things, but it sounds like they only have $490,000 worth of kind of...
Yeah, but people who used to work at Majesco are at Nighthawk Interactive. Nighthawk Interactive is currently put out, as Donald said, the Talos Principle. Also, that RBI baseball game, which is apparently hot garbage, that also came at retail because of them. So it seems like, I mean, this. I think this all adds up, and we'll find out for sure about it very soon.
Ooh. I just put in 5 year on Majesco into NASDAQ on Google, and it's just a big ol' downward.
And as Pikmin Rock 1 is pointing out in the chat, XSEED is publishing Shantae, Half-Genie Hero, and Exile's End for a retail release, both on Wii U.
Just Shantae at retail, but yeah, they are publishing Exile's End as well.
Okay.
So that's a new game.
Exile's End is not... My bad.
So for the record, $28 a share on June 10th, 2011, and today, 85 cents.
Okay. What Sanji is saying in the chat, pretty sure it means it went down from the previous reporting period. Not negative, but I'm not sure. I think he's right.
That makes sense. I'm guessing they can't be, like, running in... They can't have negative $70 million. That can't be it.
I mean, but, it's possible.
But they're a 28th of where they were 5 years ago.
Yeah. That's because the Zumba money dried up.
I've thought about buying Cooking Mama games on 3DS when they were like 75% off down to like $5 over Black Friday. I was like, you know what? I don't think I can do this to them because then they're not getting any money out of this deal. So
who cares?
Yeah.
You should just get Babysitting Mama and call it a day.
Oh, if you want to see Best of Giant Bomb, oh man.
I think that was...
Get Gardening Mama.
Yeah.
I think the Babysitting Mama stuff actually ended up getting referenced on RFN at one point, too.
Yeah, because Johnny played it in E3.
And I think James actually played it several years later.
Yeah.
But James is insane. We've established
that. I often joked about buying up cheap copies of Babysitting Mama and giving them to snappers whenever they had a child, but I could never find them for cheap enough. Mm. Like, I just wanted to, like, go to a store and, like, buy, like, alright, I'll take 10 Babysitting Mamas for $50, please. And that never happened.
Babysitting Mama, and we'll end the show after this, but just for the record, $38.99, our kids...
Plated for our FN.
Our kids are not worth $38.99 of your money, Neil.
No, they're not.
That's our show for this week, I think.
Yeah, I think we need to get the fuck out of here.
We went for about an hour, and you know what? It was a pretty good show. We had a lot of good discussion. It wasn't that boring. We kept things relatively dense. We had some Wikipedia pages. We revealed how depressing the collapse of Majesco has actually been. And then, like, you know, we're teasing E3 a little. I think that's the right thing to do for a decent show with a big day in the news. You can find Neil on Twitter at Enron10, N-R-O-N, the number 10. You can find Donald Terrio on Twitter at D-O-N-A-L-D-M-I-C-K, that's Donald Mick, or his other podcast, NFR Podcast, Nintendo Free Radio. I'm on Twitter at C-U-L-A-F-I-A. We will have more to say on our E3 plans soon. Stick around.
Patreon. And check out the Patreon, www.patreon.com/NWR.
There you go. Beat me to it.
I heard you wrapping it up. I'm like, no, we need to get the plug in.
In all fairness, I remembered it like the second I started saying Patreon. I'm like, Neil won't say anything, but he'll be mildly bugged if we don't bring up the Patreon. So we brought up the Patreon.
No, I said something.
I know.
There's a...
Also, check out Cube Fight. It's a thing that Andy Gergen and I are doing. The episode 0 is out for everyone. Episode 1 will be out tomorrow, on Friday. And then episode 2 will be out to patrons whenever I edit it.
Excellent. Patreon.com/NWR. That's our show. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.